Technorama episode 630. I slapped my neon on that one. Hey, welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. If you're joining us, returning us from far and beyond, and welcome back. I'm Chuck Tomasi, stammering through the intro, and joining me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing really good. Of course, we're recording this on an off night. You know, yesterday was Valentine's. We had a good time. I played Yahtzee with the wife and watched the movie Aladdin, which, okay, that was a low part.
I was going to say, wow, you're over 50 now, aren't you? We played Yahtzee. Getting ready for that big cribbage tournament, Craig.
I know. We were up in the mountains. We were hanging out, and we played Yahtzee. And like I said, I ended up pulling up the live-action Aladdin, which...
And?
It's all right.
You're not saving it for passing me the remote?
Actually, I will. Okay. So yeah, there's your tease. I'll bring it up. So,
yeah. T was on last week. We left him behind.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We also had a wonderful weekend. I did a number of chores, got caught up on a lot of work. We had Friday off and Monday off. And what did I do? I worked because I had to catch up on a number of things that weren't getting done and needed to get done. They couldn't be left by the wayside. So, you know, like this morning, I sent off a list of things that a guy asked me for on Friday. He said, hey, you got a list of videos? Because I want to include them when we do this project in the future. Absolutely. Well, here you go.
Actually, I did the same thing. We had an issue come up, small issue, you know, for a class that starts tomorrow. But I was like, I said, hey, it's Valentine's. I'm out of town. I'll take care of it as soon as I get back. So you'll be fine. And they were like, sure, no problem. And I did that today. I did a couple things like that. So I'm in the same boat.
Donna and I went to the gym this morning as we record this on Monday. And we'll have a bit of a talk about that on the Patreon show of how that experience went.
You pull a hamstring?
We also got some really, really good sushi tonight. So that was our Valentine's dinner with each other tonight.
The heart-shaped sushi?
I had to joke with her. I said, Can you even recall that there was this time before you ate sushi that you said you didn't ever want to eat sushi? Yes. Like, I don't want to eat raw fish.
I know. Everybody says that. I don't know if I want to eat
raw fish. Those days are gone. Yeah. And then I look at this spread that we've got in front of us going, there's not a raw fish in this thing. Everything was tempura this and baked that. And I was like, way to go.
That's right.
Alrighty. I have somewhere out there. Wait a minute. I think I put it in the template. Did I accidentally put our answers in the template? I did. Okay. Well, our question of the week last week was, what common product has a feature that you're not sure that everybody is aware of? Let me open up these links real quick and then you can move them so that they're in the show notes for everybody else. And we got a number of answers. There we go. I got my tabs up. We're ready to go. I got picture. Okay. Second question of the week. We've got, can we just see all comments? Thank you. John Kratzer says, mute buttons on the phone. I'm tired of hearing toilet flushes. He's not sure that everybody's not aware of that feature. I'm
right.
Sure they are, but they forget. Oh, it's especially fun in this day of work from home, isn't it? We also got some from Brianna saying, organizing multiple browser tabs by color and label on Google Chrome. That's not a native feature. I think there's a plugin you have to activate for
the color
tabs.
There is a plugin for that. I know Firefox had it for a while, but
yeah,
I think they did away with it. But yeah, it's nice. It comes in handy.
I used it years ago. I'm going to say about 10 years ago, and I really liked it, and I never found that plugin again.
But in Chrome, there's tab grouping. You can group some together. And if you open a link, it'll open in the group kind of thing.
Okay.
Really nice. It actually works really well, but you got to kind of organize them a little bit. You know, take some time to do that. But how many times have you been on a Zoom and somebody's got like 20 tabs?
At least. Across the I don't know how they figure out. All you can see is the icon, and most of them are ServiceNow icons. I don't know how they tell them apart.
Yeah.
And then you get stuck on this WebEx when somebody's going, no, that's not it. No, no, no. Maybe it's the next one. No. Well, there it is. No, yeah. I got to go back. There it was.
Like, I mean, if I'm doing something super involved, I'll have less than 10. I never have like 20. Like right now I got 5.
I get stressed when it's more than 5.
Yeah. When you start going, which one, but you know,
right.
When you're spending time looking for the tab. Yeah. You got too many open.
At that point I'll just go, look, I need a new window with some more tabs because, you know, over there is where I'm doing all of my, you know, mail and calendar and corporate stuff. Over on this one, I'm doing my personal stuff. Over on the other one, I'm doing my, you know, so I kind of mentally categorize them.
I have another tip for you.
What's that?
In Chrome, there's an extension you can install called One Tab. And so if you have a bunch of tabs open, say you're working on something, you want to save them, you can click the little One Tab thing and it'll make it looks like a web page inside Chrome with a list of the URLs that you were looking at. So all those tabs go away, but they're all listed there. So you open it up and you go click, click, click. You can open the ones you need back up later on.
I will take a look at. Is there a Chrome extension that doesn't do something you want?
I'm sure. Yeah, but you know what? I would call that an opportunity, right?
Yep, yep. All right. My sister put one down that I think we mentioned on this show a couple of years ago because I remember it. And I still use it today. She says, the tabs on the plastic wrap box that keep the roll from coming out when you pull or dispense the wrap. Aluminum foil does that also. If you look on the sides of those long rectangular boxes, the ends have like half circles. You push those in and it will hold the roll from coming out of the box. It's like your own little roll spooler. Like,
it
oh,
is cool.
Cool.
I also said toilet paper is like that too.
No, toilet paper is not like that. It goes on a roll. You have your toilet paper in a box?
I just want to see if y'all were replying to what?
No, I was saving it for the show just to humiliate you. Terry Taylor says, the gas pump logo on your car, on the gas gauge, on the dashboard, it has a little arrow, and that points to the side that you put the pump in.
Or, if it doesn't have an arrow, the side the little pump is on is also an indicator.
Ooh, that's subtle.
I'm just saying if there's not a triangle. Sometimes,
I haven't seen one where there isn't a triangle.
Yeah.
But it's really nice. I don't rent cars too much because I've been doing Uber on business trips. But yeah, when I used to rent cars, I used to look for that because you'd have to fill it up before you return the car, right? Otherwise, you get charged about $8 a gallon for bringing it back low. So you stop at the gas station and you got to look right as you make that final turn going, what side is it on? Look at the dashboard and you get that little arrow that helps you out.
Yes, it does make a difference.
Teresa Vanderwijnen simply says, you can use an iPhone to make phone calls. That's an unused feature that not many people know
about. Gee, imagine that.
And there are your helpful hints from the feedback section.
Wait. What? We had two questions of the week.
You're going to have to dig out the other ones because I don't have links to those.
So here's one on our Technorama podcast page. Which bug in the human genome would you like to correct? We forgot to post this before.
Undefined.
We asked this question back. Undefined. Got three comments. John Miller Jr. says, the bug that mutates the gene that turns people into entitled a-holes.
I'm sorry. You sent me this video earlier. The bug that I want to fix is illegal function at 3:30. Right. You have to share that in the show notes. If you're a strong bad fan, this is and you've used software in the early 90s or late 80s, the DOS software, you have to watch this video. It is just brilliant.
It was
brilliant.
Even the he was like, was it Friendlyware? He was
Friendlyware.
He goes, oh, this needs the amortization.
Amateurization. Yeah.
He's typing it in and it pushes the
other menu off the screen
over, which it would never do in real life, but that was funny. Yeah. Lone Guys Knight says the crooked teeth thing. That'd be nice. And, crooked teeth thing.
Okay.
And Gary Lindros said, macular degeneration would be one that he wanted to get rid of, which, There's nothing funny about that. I agree.
Oh, there's a lot of genetic bugs we could go after that, you know, are serious problems.
Yeah, I thought I shared this the other day myself. I guess that was it. So
okie doke. Okay. Hey, Dhruv is watching on YouTube out there. Thank you very much, Dhruv. Somebody else is out there. There's a second YouTube viewer that we haven't identified.
Somebody's out there.
Yep. So thank you for joining us on a Sunday night or it's not Sunday night. It's Monday night or Tuesday morning our friends in India. Get your coffee, get your tea, whatever it is. And we'll close
it upside down if you're in Australia.
We forgot to play the intro for the feedback.
That's all right.
We'll play the end.
We can close it out.
Leading us right into the history segment. On this day in history for February 17th, 2021, this is the 48th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 317 days. Craig, these days are going fast.
I was just thinking, get your Christmas shopping done.
Oh my goodness. I tell you. Right. It was on this date in 1863 that a group of citizens of Geneva founded the International Committee for Relief of the Wounded. That was just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? It
yes,
was
it does.
Later renamed the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Makes a little more sense. And it was 157 years ago today that the H.L. Hunley became the first submarine to engage and sink a warship.
Have you heard the story of the Hunley? They actually brought that back up. They found it.
It was off the coast of Charleston.
Yeah. That was not a pleasant mission to be on, let me tell you that. Those old submarines were
literally a metal tube with a spindle in the middle, and they rode it like bicycle almost.
And it had like a spar out in front that they were supposed to stick the dynamite to the... Anyway.
It was the academic definition of a submarine.
metal coffin is what it was.
Yeah.
That same date in 1867, the first ship passed through the Suez Canal.
And on February 17th, 1933, Newsweek magazine is first published.
Was there ever a week without Newsweek since then? I wonder.
It was News Yearly. Annual. News Annually.
News Not This Week.
Yes, right.
That same date in 1959, the first weather satellite was launched.
They watched it launch.
It was launched to measure cloud cover distribution.
And on February 17th, 1965, the Ranger 8 probe launched on its mission to photograph the Mare Tranquillis
Mare Tranquillitatis.
I'm sorry, yes.
Tequila.
Tranquillitatis. Region of the moon in preparation for a manned Apollo mission. Mare Quintilitatis.
Tequila.
Tequila?
It's got most of the letters in tequila.
Mare Tequila. Yeah, or the Sea of Tranquility would become the site chosen for Apollo 11 lunar lander.
That same date in 1972, cumulative sales of the Volkswagen Beetle exceeded those of the Ford Model T.
Wow. And on February 17th, 1966, NASA's Discovery Program began as a near Schumacher spacecraft lifted off, the first mission ever to orbit and land on an asteroid, 433 Eros.
Happy birthday goes out of this date to German astronomer and academic Tobias Mayer, born on this date in 1723.
And brace yourselves, Swiss physicist and meteorologist Jorge Benedict de Saussure.
Sausage.
Was born 281 years ago today.
I'm making these up like a 5-year-old would make up names that I can't read either.
Right.
Nicolas Baudin, the French cartographer and explorer, was born on this date in 1754.
And you sound like Stromberg a little bit there. French physician, invented the stethoscope. René Laennec was born 240 years ago today.
Why can't they do like some of these things and just name the stethoscope after the guy, René Stethoscope?
The René.
Right, the René scope.
Yeah.
Now, here's a good one. Aaron Montgomery Ward. What do you think he started?
Walmart.
Oh, Aaron Snowblowers? I don't know. Yeah. He was the American businessman who founded Montgomery Ward's. He was born 178 years ago today.
And Jacqueline Farren, French mathematician was born on the same date in 1918.
American actor and director Hal Holbrook was born on this date in 1925.
And also turning 59 today is American actor and director Lou Diamond Phillips.
He's 59?
Yes, he is.
George, I'm drawing a blank.
Okay.
There's a lot of people that are actually younger than you expect. He was on the cover of AARP this month. Yes, I get AARP George magazine. George Clooney, that's what it was. Yeah. Yes, George Clooney is 59. Eddie Murphy is 59. Yeah, see, you get AARP. It's like highlights for old people.
You know, well, I'll tell you something after
find
this.
The prescription in the tree.
Yeah.
Also turning 58 today. I thought this guy was way older than this. American comedian and voice actor Larry the Cable Guy. He's 58. I tell you what.
Get her done. Also turning 50 today is American model and actress Denise Richards.
She's younger than us. Who would have known? Born that same date in 1981, American model, media personality, and actress. She's 40 today. Get ready, people. Paris Hilton is 40. Oh, my. Listener birthdays this week include February 17th, Bob Trait of Megapodtastic and Action Figure Junkies. Hot John Miller of Megapodtastic. Wait a minute.
Hey,
is that our John?
Back in the deck here.
Okay. 18th. The 18th is also Ron Isalaco from Central Village, Connecticut. Scooter in Connecticut is on the 19th. Also, Steven Sumter. Steve Cody is on the 19th. Zaha Doom on the 23rd. And the 23rd is also the birthday of Keith Hughes. Happy birthday to all of you for February 17th, 2021. How's that for timing?
Awesome.
You know, I should probably turn off the pre-show thing one of these days.
Hey, before we move on.
Yeah.
So speaking of AARP, I was scrolling Facebook the other day and there's an ad. AARP was advertising the Atari Classics. I was like, just giving up.
Yeah. You are that old. You are that old.
Yeah.
AARP, for those that don't know, is the American Association of Retired Persons.
I'm not near retired just yet.
No, it's sort of that milestone when you get your application form or you start getting the magazine. I mean, I think they send the application form out when you're 45, which is just really demeaning. But
I think it was, something like that. Yeah. I think they try to get you in early so you can still fill out the form and send in money.
But you can't get the benefits till you're at least 55, which is good because now we have this retirement community right across the street that says, 55 or older. So we walk right through.
That's kind of surprising. I saw that it was a documentary about a retirement village in Florida. I saw the ad for it, the trailer for the movie. And it's a 55 or older retirement village. I'm like, that's only like 3 years off from where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm there. I'm going to be moving beyond that in a few weeks. Real quick, if you're listening, it's on the screen there, but if you're listening and you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, we'd love to give you a shout out this year or next year or whenever you're around. Just go over to chuckchat.com/wiki or chuckchat.com/birthday. Put your name on the birthday calendar and we will give you a shout out. If it's your birthday this week and we didn't give you a shout out, well, there's one way to fix that. You go put it on the calendar, but we wish you all the best either way. What do you say we do a news story?
Sure.
Okay.
Good news, everyone!
Okay, well, we'll assume this is good news. Why don't you go ahead and read it from popularmechanics.com?
As soon as I open the link, I'll stall for a minute.
Yeah, well, all right, so we're scientists ready for that.
Scientists are pretty sure they found a portal to the fifth dimension. You should have read that.
That singing band from the 60s?
The fifth dimension. Yeah. Was that on your karaoke this last Saturday?
No, but I'm thinking about adding it.
Okay. In a new study, scientists say they can explain dark matter by positing a particle that links to a fifth dimension. So while the warped extra dimension, WED, gotta love acronyms, is a trademark of popular physics model first introduced in 1999. This research published in the European Physical Journal C is the first to cohesively use the theory to explain the long-lasting dark matter problem with particle physics. So our knowledge of physical universe relies on the idea of dark matter, which makes up the vast majority of matter in the universe. Just look in the sky. It's all dark. Okay. Anyway, I'm moving along. That wasn't so funny. Dark matter. That was your cue, Chuck. You're supposed to laugh at my jokes.
You got me researching something else at the moment. I am actually looking at the Wikipedia page for the Fifth Dimension musical group. And I am fascinated by what I found. Okay,
you're
get
trying
this.
To get AARP's deal on Atari games.
This is kind of like Menudo, man. They've been rolling around the staff on this thing for a while. It was started originally with Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr., who later went on to have their own TV show. But they are still out there. They've been rolling through the band members. They keep rolling them around.
Like Chicago
or Menudo.
Yeah, Menudo.
Remember that when that was a thing? Oh my goodness. This is, you know, they had songs like Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful.
Yeah, I remember that song.
Puppet Man from 1970. We had that on 45. I totally forgot about that. Okay,
Use Evernote and save the link. And you can come back to it later.
I mean, back to your article.
All right, so dark matter is a kind of pinch hitter that helps scientists explain how gravity works. Because of a lot of features would dissolve or fall apart with the next without an X factor, you got to have something to explain it, right? Of dark matter. So even so, dark matter doesn't disrupt the particles we do see and feel, meaning it must have other special properties as well. There are still some questions which do not have an answer within the standard model of physics. The scientists from Spain and Germany explain in their study. One of the most significant examples is the so-called hierarchy problem. The question why the Higgs boson is much lighter than the characteristic scale of gravity. The standard model of physics cannot accommodate some other observed phenomena.
Yeah, we were going there. That actually is on my karaoke list.
Was that it? Anyway. I'll let you go. I'll let you read. I know we're talking about your karaoke list and not the Fifth Dimension. And
we took this article off the tracks.
Yeah, screw this.
there's more fun things to talk about as we move into. Well, you know what? Before we go into another article, I want to give a shout out to the chat room. Let's see who's around. We already mentioned Dhruv on YouTube. Welcome, welcome. Who do you see on Facebook, Craig?
I see Scott Tyler, who I'm replying to right now.
Yes, I see.
John Miller Jr. John Miller Jr.
And Craig Stepp and Chuck Tomasi. But we have some others out there. Oh, one of them just abandoned us. Thanks. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Nobody watches Technorama. That means whoever's watching it is a nobody. Yeah. All right. Let's, if you can watch us, if you want to stick around and watch us on Sunday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, that's in the U.S., or whatever time it is for you in your neck of the woods. And when you all change your clocks in about a month, well, guess what? It's still 9:30 Eastern. I just have to adjust my clock and broadcast a little earlier. No problem there. Let's move on with the remember when. That means it'd be my turn to read something.
Epic. I don't know why I keep thinking in my head, remember Juan.
Juan?
I don't know.
What happened to Juan?
I don't know where that came from. Every time you say remember when, I think remember when.
No, remember nice when. She's a nice girl, when. It's September 23rd, 1996. It's a Monday. The Macarena is pumping out of the office radio midway through its 14-week run at the top of the Billboard Hot 100, doing little to improve the usual Monday gloom. Someone's got a case of the Mondays.
Yeah.
Easing yourself into the week, you idly thumb through the magazine and read about Windows NT 4.0, released just a couple of months previous. You wonder to yourself whether Microsoft's hot new operating system might finally be worth using. Then it's down to work. Microsoft can keep its fancy GUIs and graphical server operating systems. NetWare 3.12 is where it's at. Boom! Bulletproof file and print sharing. The server named Intel after its process needs an update, so you install it and reboot. It comes up fine, so you get on with the rest of your day. Now we do the diddle-doo, 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 diddle-doo. 16 and a half years later, Intel's hard disks a pair of full height 5 1/4 inch 800 meg quantum SCSI drives are making some disconcerting noises from their bearings.
Oh my God, that sound.
Ugh. And you're tired of the complaints. Yeah, because half the people are now deaf. It's time to turn off the old war horse. Well, connection terminated. It seems almost criminal. The server was decommissioned by one of our forum users, Axatex, as documented in his thread. 16.5 years is a long time. Can anyone beat that for the uptime on one server?
That's pretty good, considering the power wasn't an issue for that long.
Monitor never died. I mean, the graphics, the video card never died.
You can swap a monitor out without the computer going down.
800 meg, 5 1/4 inch full height hard drives. Wow.
I know. Yeah, that is
1996.
They don't build computers like that anymore.
Wait a minute. If it was 16. Oh, this article is from 2013, Craig.
Yeah, it is. And I was going to get to why I pulled
up the article itself is a remember when.
Yeah. Well, let me explain the situation. So I found a photo. I think I sent it to you I posted it in that SCO Unix group on Facebook. And it was a picture of the home screen on NetWare. And I had 2 years of uptime, which around here in my area is pretty amazing because, you know, the power can go out. You know, we've had hurricanes come through.
Do you have a UPS?
Yeah, but how long does that last? I mean, the power would have had to, it never went out longer than the UPS is what I was getting at. So I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. I put the picture up in the group and people like, oh no, hold my beer. And they sent me a couple of articles and this is one of them. So I thought that our listeners would appreciate this 16 years of uptime.
That's equivalent to that light bulb in the firehouse in San Francisco that's been burning for like 105 years or whatever
it
is.
Yeah, exactly. Now, speaking of which, the other article, I found this one. I remembered this story, so I found it and I added it. It's even older. It's from April 2001 and it's real short. I'll read it to you real quick. It's in the kind of tale that any inspiring BOHF, not sure, what is that? BOHF?
BOHF. I don't know.
Would be able to dine out on for months. The University of North Carolina has finally located one of its most reliable servers, which nobody has seen in 4 years. So one of the university's Novell servers has been doing the business for years and nobody stopped to wonder where it was at. Until some bright spark realized an audit of the campus network was well overdue. According to a report by TechWeb, it was only then that those campus techies realized that they couldn't find the server. Attempting to follow the network cable to find the missing box led to the discovery that maintenance workers had sealed the server up behind a wall. So things buried behind the walls, behind the wall, more of the world Edgar Allan Poe than that of BOHF. What is BOHF? And think
Boy
of the horror
on hot
facing
fire.
All the college
techies if it'd been, huh? Boy on hot fire.
Oh, and think of the horror facing the college techies if they had ever replaced this old server with an NT box.
All right. I have placed the Strong Bad video mentioned earlier in the show notes in the Geek Library and also sent it to the Facebook chat.
Yeah.
Because you can't put URLs into YouTube chat. Sorry. But we will put that in the show notes. You can check that out over at chuckchat.com/technorama episode 630. You can find that when we get done with this. I think, Craig, you'll have those posted up there Tuesday.
Should work. What's that? The show notes?
Yes.
Yeah. Tuesday evening they go up.
Okay. Let's have another Remember When article. Long forgotten attic hid a photography studio and a famous portrait of Susan B. Anthony. What's the likelihood of that? Well, want more inspiring positive news aside from servers that have been up and locked behind walls?
Right.
Well, sign up for That Good Stuff, a newsletter for the good life. It will brighten your inbox every Saturday morning. This from CNN. David J. Whitcomb had no idea that the Geneva, New York building he bought in December 2020 for his law office even had an attic. So he was doubly surprised to find the treasures that have been stashed there for nearly 100 years. Wow. Whitcomb and a friend noticed that the ceiling on the third floor looked odd after going up to change a light bulb. After 170.
They were changing that light bulb from the
firehouse in San Francisco. You see how we're weaving this together accidentally, people?
Yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah, the universe is telling us something tonight, like, hey, you've been podcasting too long. Yeah. They saw an access panel and stacked up some chairs so that Whitcomb could climb up and see what was inside, illuminated only by a tiny flashlight on his phone. Quote, the first thing I saw was a whole bunch of picture frames stacked together, and these frames are gorgeous. Then the turn of the century, they're gold, gilded, and some shone really bright. And it was like, oh, my God, he said. I lowered myself and I said, I think we just found the Goonies treasure. That is actually the quote. I just threw in a little vocal thing, but that's the quote.
Makes me laugh.
Nice to know I can do a little characterization while I'm doing a cold read, too. They returned the following day to spend about 12 hours going through the stacks of pictures, frames, glass negatives, and photography equipment from the late 1800s and early 1900s. One of the things they found was a framed portrait of suffragist leader Susan B. Anthony that was taken by photographer James Hale in 1905, a year before her death. I almost read that as a year after her death. That would have been really morbid, but okay. Anthony campaigned tirelessly for women's rights, including the right to vote, and was arrested in 1872 for voting in an election. Scandalous. She's also on one of our coins. We had a dollar coin with Susan B. Anthony on there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He gave the copyright to the photo to Susan B. Anthony Memorial Association, which selected the picture as her official photographer and sold prints and postcards to raise funds. A clipping featured the photo in the collection of the Library of Congress. Whitcomb said they found mail and other documents with Hale's name on it and pieces of original glass plate negative used to print the photo. Broken at some point over the years. Dang.
Mm. Okay. Oh, that's what he's got in his hand. I was trying to figure out,
I thought he was shining his phone at us. I'm not sure.
It kind of looks like that, but it says he holds a fragment of the glass photographic negative.
Okay. They haven't yet found the section of the negative with her head, but one piece shows the flag pin she wore on her left side in the portrait. Whitcomb is still hoping to find the rest of the negative, but he fears that it might be lost for good. Wow, that's a pretty incredible find to find that in your attic.
Isn't it?
Amazing.
Actually, it's kind of weird that was the photography studio, I would say, up in the attic.
Oh, we have another story. Didn't we cover this story last time?
I had it in the show notes, but...
we skipped over it. That's right. We skipped over it because tea was running long.
I wasn't gonna throw him under the bus, but okay.
That's all right. We throw you under the bus on Podcasting for Dummies.
Yeah, what?
I'm the glue that holds these things together.
Yeah, true.
Go ahead, read away.
All right. So the San Diego man's wallet was lost in Antarctica. Turns up 53 years later.
Wow.
And so it's pretty kind of amazing. He already renewed his license and everything. It's kind of awkward.
Yeah, I would hope you would have renewed your license after 53 years. Whether you lost it or not.
Yeah, so Paul Grisham's wallet was missing for so long at the bottom of the world, he forgot about it. 53 years later, the 91-year-old San Diego man has it back with mementos of his 13-month assignment as a U.S. Navy meteorologist in Antarctica in the 60s. I was blown away, Grisham said, as he told the San Diego Union Tribune. After the wallet was returned on Saturday, there was a long series of people involved who tracked me down and ran me to ground.
Not sure what that phrase means, but okay.
Well, he sure is a Navy man. That's probably where that came from.
They ran me to ground.
They ran me to ground. The wallet contained his Navy ID, driver's license, a pocket reference card on what to do during an atomic, biological, or chemical attack, a beer ration punch card. Yeah, I guess he can still check, cash it in, right? Got some punch left on it.
We still have the beer from 1967. Yeah. Here you go, buddy. Enjoy.
A tax withholding statement and receipts for money orders sent to his wife. So Grisham, who was raised in Douglas, Arizona, enlisted in the Navy in 1948, became a weather technician and then a weather forecaster. In 1967, he was sent to Antarctica as part of an Operation Deep Freeze. It's an original name, which supported civilian scientists. At the time, he was in his 30s and married with two toddlers. I went down there kicking and screaming.
You can't make me!
He told the Union Tribune. At some point, he lost the wallet. Something he later forgot. It was found behind a locker in 2014 during the demolition of a building at McMurdo Station in Ross Island.
Wow.
But finding his owner, owner still took emails, Facebook messages, and letters exchanged among a group of amateur sleuths.
And the fact that he's still alive at 91 and they got it back to him. That's amazing. That's better than my lost wallet story in Scotland.
Oh yeah. I think I remember that. Yep.
Yeah. That was 2007. I think I went over there to do a data closet move. They were moving offices from the ground floor up to the second floor. And my wallet got stolen right out at my, one of the last things we moved in the office move was the coat rack, and my coat was on it and my wallet was in my coat. And when we went out to eat later, I realized I didn't have my wallet. In fact, I didn't have it. I thought I might have left it at the restaurant because the boss
made it. Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah.
I got to the hotel after the restaurant. So I called the restaurant. They didn't have it. So then I figured it was stolen. But I didn't think it was stolen from the office. And the Technorama listeners were very gracious. You all pitched in and bought me a wallet with a Faraday wallet, which that's I still use. I still use it to this day. So here it is, what, 14 years later, still using the same wallet that you gave me. Never went back to my old long fold wallet. But the about 3 weeks later, I got a postal mail to work from the Glasgow Police Department saying they found something of my property. And I said, I called them up and I said, I know exactly what it is and I can describe
it. Can you explain the body it was with?
Well, they found it in the bushes. And of course, the money was gone, but all the credit cards were there. But we'd already canceled and replaced the credit cards. But I did get back one thing that I would have dearly missed, and that was one of my very old dive certification cards. So I got that back, and all's well that ends well. But it wasn't 53 years. Man, that'd be rough.
What was it like the same year, right?
Oh, yeah, it was just a few weeks later, like three weeks or 5 weeks later, I got the postal mail. And then they sent it back. So that was very nice that I got it back. And the fact that it ended up in Glasgow pointed to the suspects, who were some college kids from Glasgow. We were over in a little town called Livingston, just outside of Edinburgh, and which is an hour and a half drive. So these college kids came over to do some manual labor for pay and lifted my wallet and got a couple hundred pounds out of the deal. So that was their bonus. And that
had to get them?
Well, no, that had to come out of my paycheck too. Cause that to get money, to get cash, to get home, I needed to make withdrawal. Yeah. And that was on the expense report and that was out of my wallet. So, I mean, work isn't going to pay for things that are stolen, obviously. So that kind of blew, but lesson learned about foreign travel. Hang on to your wallet with both hands. All right. That was a fun story. And we go into our patron thing because this is where we thank our wonderful patrons for their generous contributions. And this time I will remember to put the title up for the patrons. Yes. Got the button pushing down. Thank you very much to Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman. It's people like these for as little as a dollar a show. They are contributing and keeping this show running. We've got hosting, we've got software, we've got hardware, we've got all kinds of things to pay for in this podcast, and you keep them running. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dan D. Mann, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, thank you, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, thank you, John Noble and Jorga Schrauen and Christina, thank you, Kyle Nishioka and Leon and Mark Tilfoyle, Mike Wills, we appreciate it very much, Chris Martinez, our newest Patreon member, thank you, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve London. Thank you, everyone, for your generous contributions, as I mentioned, for as little as a dollar a show. See, if we don't produce a show, you don't pay. That's the cool part. And
but if we make one a day, you're in trouble.
We won't do that. Trust me.
We would not do that.
We won't do that. And
hey, what's all this one-minute podcast for 30
days? Until Craig and I are retired and have nothing better to do, that won't happen. So. Yeah. Go over to patreon.com/technorambapodcast and you can sign up for as little as a dollar a show. And it's about time of the year for us to get the postcards out, Craig.
Yes, it is.
We're going to figure that one out. How are we going to do the logistics on this year?
I'll meet you in Louisiana.
Start driving.
Yeah, start driving.
I'm on my way. See ya. All right, let's fade out the band. Thank you very much again. patreon.com/technorambapodcast. We'll get that off the screen and move into Pass Me the Remote. Ooh, you got a couple on here.
Yep.
Okay.
Did you have anything?
I just finished up season 2 of The Expanse, rewatching it, because I watched it years ago and I couldn't remember where I left off. So I was like, is this where I left off? No, this is familiar. Mm-hmm. Is this where I left off? But I wanted to re-cement the plot line for the first 2 seasons. Now sure. I'm going to be into new territory. I just finished up season 3 right before the show.
Okay.
Or season 2. Finished up season 2.
As I say, you skipped one there. I got you. So listening to T talk about Fear City.
Yes. Did you like it?
New York versus the mob. Yes, actually I did. There was a lot of it. Some of it I knew, some of it I didn't, and it kind of pieced some things together. But hearing the audio comments and what the police actually went through to actually, or the FBI, whoever, to really nail down these crimes, it's pretty amazing, especially some of the bugs that they, you know, I think back in
dangerous before, stuff too.
Yeah. So you look back in the 80s or early 80s, late 70s, you start thinking about the technology and, you know, you think of a bug back then. You know, I'm thinking it's some circuit board.
No, they could get them down to like an inch square.
Yeah, I know. Well, nowadays you can get them even smaller than that. Oh, I'm just saying back then, you think back and you're like, okay, you know, it can't be streamlined like it is today. However, the places they were putting these, the techniques that they were doing that, and some of the things, sketchy things that they were doing, like going in this house and pretending to be a TV repair guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be on edge too much. Anyway, it was a fun watch. Like I said, it was 3 episodes, and some of the things that those people did on both sides of the fence was kind of amazing.
If you like that kind of stuff about espionage, there's another Netflix show about spy tech. And
yes, I just started that. I just saw that. So
what,
yes.
What was the name of that show? I'm trying to remember.
Spycraft.
That's what it was.
Is that right?
It's something like that. There's also, if you're interested, podcast listeners, the Spycast, which has been around for 10 years or more.
I recommend that highly.
Yeah. Good stuff. They talk to authors. They talk to the people that are in the industry. They talk to former spies. They talk to a lot of good stuff on Spycast.
Yeah, definitely check that out. I've always recommended that one highly because you listen to some of the stories, especially some of the early stories of agents in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I always think when I'm listening to them, I'm thinking this is where the rubber meets the road. This guy's in harm's way doing major work. It just like a movie, you know, this is real. It's amazing.
Yep. Yep. Okay. What's your other show? What else have you seen?
So, finally broke down and watched Aladdin, the live action movie with Will Smith.
Yes.
I thought it was well done. I liked it. It probably wasn't the best Valentine's movie to watch, but I don't know. It was just there. And so, I thought Will's, you know, people were giving Will Smith a hard time before even the movie came out. Because one, Robin Williams had that character in the animated series and everybody loved him. Who didn't love Robin Williams? And then you got Will Smith. So he had a lot to live up to, even though the character really was his own take on it, not at all Robin Williams. But I think he did a great job. The animation and the computer animation seemed to work well. I thought it was fun, but I came away thinking, why did they feel like they had to make it?
Money.
Yeah, well, it's the same reason the live-action Lion King, you know, it's like, it's a shot-for-shot remake. Why'd you have to make it again? You know, it's even just to make a live-action, it's a cash grab. So anyway, it exists. I thought it was fine. I did see the anime 1 year ago. I probably like it a little bit better.
All right. Give him a rating. What did you think of the, New York versus a mob?
How are we rating these?
Zero to 10.
0 to 10. I would say Fear City was, a good 8.5, 9.
Yep. I agree.
That was a good one. Aladdin, yeah, John Miller Jr. says it felt a bit off for him too. So, I'd probably give it about a 6 or so.
Okay.
You know, it's above average, but again, I didn't really see a need to make it.
Very good. Let's go into the media corner then.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the media corner.
Remember Blockbuster Video? Yeah. That should be in the Remember When section now.
Remember Blockbuster Video?
We have a new Star Trek game that lets you play the Kobayashi Maru for prizes. Okay, let's try this out. Star Trek's new browser game will let you fail the Kobayashi Maru as many times as you want. What kind of... It's a no-win scenario, people. You got to realize that.
I actually want it.
CBS...
Wait a minute. I actually want it.
You can't win the Kobayashi Maru unless you cheat.
You can.
You cheated.
I didn't cheat. I just reprogrammed it. I'm sorry.
Change the parameters. CBS has announced its partnership with Scopely, who already make the Star Trek Fleet Command game for mobile platforms, to release Star Trek Kobayashi Maru. Wasn't that a game like 30, 40 years ago? I remember a Kobayashi Maru game.
Maybe it was an extra or something on one of those deep CD-ROM...
floppy disk, something like that. Anyway, this is a retro-stylized decision-making game that puts you in the hot seat as a Starfleet cadet preparing to take the Academy's most infamous command track test, the Kobayashi Maru. In Star Trek lore, the no-win scenario test sees cadets commanding a Starfleet vessel as it comes across a distress signal from the Kobayashi Maru, a damaged civilian freighter that finds itself adrift in Klingon territory. It's meant to humble potential captains with the idea that not every situation they will encounter aboard a Starfleet vessel has a positive outcome. That sometimes hard decisions will have to be made and lives lost because there is no magically right answer. That is, unless you're James T. Kirk. Yeah. And magically right answer is to hack the test program and cheat your way to victory in protest. Sadly, you can't pull a Kirk in the new game, but there's a 1 in 10,000 chance that you can actually beat Star Trek Kobayashi Maru as you make your own decisions exploring Federation space. There are also a zillion extra ways for you to fail, even beyond getting into a skirmish with the Klingons, like in the original test, meaning some choices you make could mean you and your crew mess up well before you even make it to the distress signal in the first place.
Yeah.
We're picking up a distress call. Boom.
Yeah.
you really there was are bad.
I was actually playing. I played it a couple times and you were making some decisions before you even got to the decision point. You know, the big thing. So I was like, wow, we're actually playing a little bit more of the scenario before you actually get to the no win part.
I have a problem with this test because if you keep using it over and over and over again, the students are going to become aware of the situation that you can't I mean, it's supposed to test the psychological, test your mettle, how you face this situation. But if you go in knowing it's a no-win situation, you're going to, it's kind of like, well, violence on TV, they say, makes kids more prone to violence and they become numb to it. Wouldn't that happen over time? I mean, if you said, look, nobody's won this thing in 30 years, why should I go in expecting anything different? So I'm going to lose in some way, shape, or form. So let's just figure out how to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't really be testing you wouldn't get any insights as to what that captain is capable of under stress, because there's no more stress if you expect to lose. I submit that it has a flaw. Take that, Mr. Spock.
It's a test of your character, man. Come on.
Yeah, but you're not exhibiting your true character if you go in knowing what the result is.
Well, you could take a step back and say, you could say the same thing, just knowing it's a simulation.
John Miller Jr. says, I use the force to win. Suck it, Kirk.
Kirk is a jerk.
Still one of my favorite cosplays.
I'm
pretty sure that was Dragon Con. I would, if the shirt wasn't so expensive, I would get one and do that. All right.
Use some tape. Put it on the back.
If you do happen to win, there are prizes to be had. The first three people to find a way to beat the Kobayashi Maru will win things like Star Trek merch. And if you're in a country where it's actually available, a lifetime subscription to CBS All Access. Paramount Plus.
Yay.
If you want to see if you've got what it takes to best the Kobayashi Maru or just how badly you can fail it. Wow, that's really, you know, people could get depressed on that. Like,
I can't win.
I'm going to lose. Yeah. You're buying a video game that you know you're going to lose. Consider that. Every time. Yeah. There is no win. There is no end game to this.
Well, you're not buying it.
You're playing it online. It's okay.
You're buying it with your time, right?
Yeah, my time is very valuable, so that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Alrighty. What's that leave us with? The Geek Library?
Yeah, just a quick video.
Gotta play the song. Yes? What'd you do with my link?
I just made it a link. All right. Okay. So, this video is, it's of a fleet of Tesla cars and they're updating the software in a parking lot. And they note that it looks like aliens are coming, like Close Encounters or something. So, someone captured video of Tesla updating the software in a fleet of cars. And it looks like, as I said, aliens are coming.
Are they doing this wirelessly?
Yes.
Okay.
So here we go. Tesla is an early adopter and the early leader in adopting the capacity to push over-the-air software updates to their customer vehicles ever since 2012. While most automakers have little to no capacity to release software updates beyond having their owners bring the cars into the dealership.
Honda.
Sorry. I know. Ford. Well, no, actually, I can update over the Wi-Fi. So Tesla was able to simply push new features and improvements and bug fixes over the air like a smartphone. Just don't do it while I'm driving. You get a reboot.
And then apparently the alarm system goes off on many of these where it's flashing the lights. Or maybe that's just the
loading
the version of loading. When the lights stop flashing, it's loaded.
Yeah. So here you go. New updates become available through the vehicle's center display, even though the Tesla app, which can then push the update to the vehicle remotely. When the electric vehicles haven't been delivered yet, Tesla can push new software updates directly, and someone managed to catch the video happening to a whole fleet in the parking lot. And it's pretty cool to see. You see all the cars starting to flash.
There have to be a few thousand Teslas in this parking lot.
Easy. Yeah, easy.
That's a lot of cars.
Yeah, you know, I kept thinking, why? I can hook my phone up to the car and then, of course, use Android Auto. The thing can use the Bluetooth internet. Why can't they do software updates? Of course, mine is connected to the Wi-Fi at the house. So when I pull in, I can do check update, but you know what? I do it every once in a while, and it's like, no, there's nothing. I'm like, so, thanks.
Mine just comes up as a software update available. Like, fine, you know, you told me there's an update available, so let's do it. Why should I have to go into the dealer and they make me sit there for? Sometimes they don't even make you sit there. They go, oh, you want to borrow a vehicle or should we have somebody drive you home? It's like, how long is this going to take? Because I can do my phone in 10 minutes.
Hey, I update my software regularly on my phone in less than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a bit ridiculous that we're not there with our vehicles yet. But,
yeah,
you know, when lives are at stake, you want to be a little more cautious.
What's that joke about if Microsoft made cars?
No, let's not. Let's not. Okay. Question of the week as we sign out this week. What have you wasted the most time on? And don't say your kids.
No.
Was it worth it? What have you wasted the most time on and was it worth it?
You know what? I'm going to have a hard time trying to choose what I wasted my time on.
Well, there's games. I'm going to say... I spent a lot of time writing the app that generates our history segment, but I use it every week. And yes, it is worth it because it took the drudgery out of going through it. Go to my personal YouTube channel. You'll find it. It's in there about how it's not an exaggeration. I mean, I used to take 40, 50 minutes to do that 5-minute segment every week. And it was a lot of handcrafting of the text. And I said, you know what? I can put some patterns together and it'll generate this for me. So now I focus on just clicking what articles or what topics, the birthdays and the events that we want. And it generates the text for me and then copy paste it into the show notes under 10 minutes. So if you can go from 40 minutes to 10 minutes on a process, yeah, that's worth it to me. And I use that as a story for work too. So yeah, I got some marketing bonus out of that.
There's been some times I've probably more than once I've written an app only to either find something that does everything and more, or just end up abandoning it altogether. You know, so I don't know. I'd have to think of some good examples. I guess I got a problem. I've wasted a lot of time in my life.
I have a similar question to this: is what have you spent money on that you never used?
Oh shit! Let me turn the webcam around.
it's like you think it's useful at the time, and you get it from Amazon or mail order or even a subscription service. You go, I never got benefit one out of that. I never used it. It might even still be here in the box that it came in.
Here you go.
Oh, what do you got?
This thing right here. Oh, chair's creeping away from me. The Bluetooth speaker that AARP sent me.
Now, you didn't buy that, though.
No, not exactly. Well, no, I didn't.
Right. It you was didn't a buy it.
Free gift. And I'm going to tell you, the audio quality on that is the worst.
A lot of cheap Bluetooth speakers are terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even like one I go, I may use it in a pinch. No, it's terrible.
Sorry. And the battery's less about 20 minutes. So it's like, what's the point?
And you know what? Speaking of wasted time, I'm sure there was somebody that spent an hour trying to get it to work only to say, wow, this sucks, and didn't use it. So there you go. What have you wasted time on, and was it worth it?
You didn't waste your time on that. How's that?
I didn't.
Okay, we'll post that question to social media and have it for you in next week. Until then.
And by the way, yes. I'd want to do a shout out real quick because we've had some other people commenting in. Mike Robeson was in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
Amy Bowen.
And our own Amy Bowen was in there.
And my niece, Samantha Bush.
Well, she said Uncle Chuck, and I was thinking, is she referencing the movie?
No, that's Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck.
No. No, she is my brother-in-law's daughter. And she's got a baby of her own, so very good on them. That makes me a great uncle. I'm just a great uncle.
Yeah. You're wonderful.
There's really good uncles and there's great uncles, and I'm one of them. So thank you very much for joining us. We hope to see you again around next week. Join us. Get in contact with us. Numbers are at the bottom of the screen. 707-530-2428. That's how you can call us on the listener line. We haven't heard from you in a long time. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com, or find us at the website and all that other good information about Twitter and Facebook is going to be right there at chuckchat.com/technorama. Hope to see you again next week. We will be recording our Patreon show right after this. So those of you who paid your dollar, or at least a dollar a show every week, we'll get that dedicated feed right to them. It is going to be fun. I might have a bit of a rant.
Uh-oh. Brace yourself.
If you're hearing this, you probably already heard that. So until next week, Craig, give him a binary high five.
All right. 101. Thanks,
everybody.
Thank you for listening and tuning in.